You're with Sounds Good, our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Austin Carter, joined in the studio by Daryl Phillippe from Murray State's Department of Theater. Welcome to the show today, Daryl.
Thanks for having me, Austin. I'm glad to be here.
And you're going to read an excerpt here coming up shortly from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but maybe we can talk a little bit about the history of that novel. Not too much, but she was a young woman when she wrote this book. Isn't that correct?
Well, she would be a what we might call a college freshman or sophomore. She was 18 or 19 years old when she wrote this story. Obviously, as a woman living in the time period in which she did, the early 1800s, she didn't have the educational opportunities that are afforded to men, obviously. But she was certainly well-educated as a young woman, and well, she was married married to a very famous poet from the era, so she was very into literature, as it were. And she did create this this legacy of this wonderful book and all the different various film adaptations that have sprung off of it. So we owe a debt to her. One of the interesting things about the book, and actually I'd never read the book until I started doing some research on what I'm about to read today. My familiarity was from the old 1930s films and various film adaptations. You know, just reading some critique of the book and those types of things, they talk about this as being kind of a creation myth for science. One of the articles I was reading was talking about how all cultures, all religions have some kind of creation mythology where the creation of human beings comes from some kind of divine being. And we don't often think of science rejects that notion. And this is kind of Mary Shelley's approach of saying, hey, here's a creation myth from the aspect of science, where man is actually the creator. Man plays the role of God in that sense. So I found that to be very interesting, as well as just reading the various chapters from the book that I was able to get through between the other day and today. Really extraordinary writing, especially for someone who's 18 or 19 years old. One other thing that I think is really kind of exciting about this is, you know, we think of Victor Frankenstein, the doctor, the mad scientist who creates the monster, typically as maybe an older, much older man, a middle-aged man, perhaps. That's how he's often depicted in the films, and obviously the actors usually appear to be much older, but this is kind of like a college science project that Victor has found himself wanting to work on. He becomes fascinated with the animation of dead flesh through electricity, and he sets out to reanimate the dead. So this is, again, a young college age man who is creating this. So I find that to be fascinating as well, that it's you know, many of our listeners here are being at a college university. Maybe this could be a good science experience for you guys to undertake while you're here at Murray State University.
Definitely, definitely. Well, there's definitely something in the heart of this story about science going awry, something that we see echoed in a lot of literature and things that have come after this work. But we can go ahead and hear a little bit from this excerpt from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Okay, I'll give it a go here. It was on a dreary night of November that I beheld the accomplishment of my toils. With an anxiety that almost amounted to agony, I collected the instruments of life around me that I might infuse a spark of being into the lifeless thing that lay at my feet. It was already 1 in the morning. The rain pattered dismally against the panes, and my candle was nearly burnt out when, by the glimmer of the half-extinguished light, I saw the dull, yellow eye of the creature opened. It breathed hard, and a convulsive motion agitated its limbs. How can I describe my emotions at this catastrophe, or how delineate the wretch whom with such infinite pains and care I had endeavored to form? His limbs were in proportion, and I had selected his features as beautiful. Beautiful. Great God! His yellow skin scarcely covered the work of muscles and arteries beneath his hair was a lustrous black and flowing, and his teeth of pearly whiteness. But these luxuriances only formed a more horrid contrast with his watery eyes that seemed almost of the same color as the dun-white sockets in which they were set, his shriveled complexion and straight black lips. The different accidents of life are not so changeable as the feelings of human nature. I had worked hard for nearly 2 years for the sole purpose of infusing life into an inanimate body. For this, I had deprived myself of rest and health. I had desired it with an ardor that far exceeded moderation, but now that I had finished, the beauty of the dream vanished, and breathless horror and disgust filled my heart. Unable to endure the aspect of the being I had created, I rushed out of the room and continued a long time traversing my bedchamber, unable to compose my mind to sleep. At length, lassitude succeeded to the tumult I had before endured, and I threw myself on the bed in my clothes, endeavoring to seek a few moments of forgetfulness. But it was in vain. I slept, indeed, but I was disturbed by the wildest dreams. I thought I saw Elizabeth, in the bloom of health, walking in the streets of Ingolstadt. Delighted and surprised, I embraced her, but as I imprinted the first kiss on her lips, they became livid with the hue of death. Her features appeared to change, and I thought that I held the corpse of my dead mother in my arms. A shroud enveloped her form, and I saw the grave worms crawling in the folds of the flannel. I started from my sleep with horror. A cold dew covered my forehead. My teeth chattered, and every limb became convulsed. When, by the dim and yellow light of the moon as it forced its way through the window shutters, I beheld the wretch, the miserable monster whom I had created. He held up the curtain of the bed, and his eyes, if eyes they may be called, were fixed on me. His jaws opened, and he muttered some inarticulate sounds while a grin wrinkled his cheeks. He might have spoken, but I did not hear. One hand was stretched out, seemingly to detain me, but I escaped and rushed downstairs. I took refuge in the courtyard belonging to the house which I inhabited, where I remained during the rest of the night, walking up and down in the greatest agitation, listening attentively, catching and fearing each sound as if it were to announce the approach of the demoniacal corpse to which I had so miserably given life. Oh! No mortal could support the horror of that countenance. A mummy, again endued with animation, could not be so hideous as that wretch. I had gazed on him while unfinished. He was ugly then, but when those muscles and joints were rendered capable of motion, it became a thing such as even Dante could not have conceived. I passed the night wretchedly. Sometimes my pulse beat so quickly and hardly that I felt the palpitation of every artery. At others, I nearly sank to the ground through languor and extreme weakness. Mingled with this horror, I felt the bitterness of disappointment. Dreams that had been my food and pleasant rest for so long, a space where now became a hell to me. And the change was so rapid, the overthrow so complete. Morning, dismal and wet, at length dawned and discovered to my sleepless and aching eyes the church of Ingolstadt, its white steeple and clock, which indicated the sixth hour. The porter opened the gates of the court, which had that night been my asylum, and I issued into the streets, pacing with quick steps, as if I sought to avoid the wretch whom I feared every turning of the street would present to my view. I did not dare return to the apartment which I inhabited, but felt impelled to hurry on, although drenched by the rain which poured from a black and comfortless sky. I continued walking in this manner for some time, endeavoring by bodily exercise to ease the load that weighed upon my mind. I traversed the streets without any clear conception of where I was or what I was doing. My heart palpitated in the sickness of fear, and I hurried on with irregular steps, not daring to look about me. Like one who on a lonely road doth walk in fear and dread, and having once turned round, walks on, and turns no more his head, because he knows a frightful fiend doth close behind him tread.
That was excellent. That was Darryl Phillippe reading an excerpt from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yes, that's actually from Chapter 5. The chapter obviously does continue on, and his anxiety is relieved a little bit. A lifelong friend of his, Henry Clerval, arrives in a carriage, and seeing him, this lightens Victor's mood quite a bit. However, they do return back to Victor's apartment, where he's going to entertain Henry with drinks and food. And, of course, he's afraid that the monster is still there at the apartment. He's overtaken with his fears. The monster, he is not really there, but he sees him, and he convulses and collapses into a state of terror, and is taken ill for a couple of months. And the book story continues on from there.
Well, that was excellent, Darryl. Thank you for being with us today, and thank you for reading that for us.
I'm glad to do it, and happy Halloween, everyone.
Thanks. You're with Murray State's WKMS. We sound good because of listeners like you.